I'm Andrew Schwartz, and you're listening to The Truth of the Matter, a podcast by CSIS where we break down the top policy issues of the day and talk with the people that can help us best understand what's really going on. To get to the truth of the matter about impact from the Ukrainian-Russian war on global food security and Ukraine's agriculture sector, we have with us Caitlin Welsh, who is the CSIS Director of the Global Food and Water Security Program. Caitlin, welcome back to the podcast.
Great to be back. Thanks for having me, Andrew.
So for the past 2 years, the Global Food and Water Security Program has analyzed the impacts of Russia's war in Ukraine on global food security and on Ukraine's agriculture sector. And you've also shed light onto the ways that agriculture and food are central to Russia's military strategy in Ukraine and its political strategy for expanding its influence around the world. Before we get to all that, I want to ask you to give us an overview. What has Russia done to Ukraine's agricultural infrastructure, and how has this affected Ukraine's production and exports?
Thank you, Andrew. Great place to start. And before I start answering that question, just want to say that I think that any analysis of Russia's war in Ukraine is incomplete without looking at the role of agriculture and food security in Russia's war strategy. So thanks for having me here to continue to talk about this with you. So what it is that Russia has done, over the past 2 years, Russia has systematically targeted all aspects of Ukraine's agricultural production and transport infrastructure. We had anecdotal evidence of this very early on. A couple months into the war at CSIS, we analyzed satellite imagery of Russia's destruction to farms, fields, warehouses, railway bridges, other types of infrastructure to show exactly how it was that Russia was executing this. Fighting across Ukraine has affected fields, so indirectly through munitions that are left in place, and also directly because Russia has a landmine campaign that directly targets Ukraine's fields. And in fact, the name of this campaign is Agriculture in Russian, and it's a system whereby Russia can lay complex landmines in a very short amount of time across Ukraine's farmlands. And as of last summer, in fact, Ukraine became the most mined country in the world, with more landmines in Ukraine than any other country in the world. So there are impacts of Russia's direct attacks on production and export infrastructure, impacts of landmines. In fact, all of this you can see from outer space. The NASA Harvest Program shows from above what we can think of as a scar. So it's farmland that's been abandoned because of the war, and it's essentially the swath of land that follows the front line from northern to southern Ukraine in the eastern part of the country. So this is visible from space. All of this means that the farmed area in Ukraine has fallen, so less area is being farmed, and then production and exports are falling likewise. So wheat exports for this coming year are going to be down 11% compared to the year before. Maize exports down 15%. So all of that is what has happened to Ukraine's production and exports because of Russia's targeting. And then a note too, it's not just these direct impacts on production and export. It's also looking at how transportation has been disrupted from even before Russia invaded Ukraine. Russia was patrolling the Black Sea, so all of Ukraine's ag exports had halted. They ground to a halt for the first 4 months of the war, picked back up in July 2022 when the Black Sea Grain Initiative was in place, and that allowed Ukraine to export a fair amount of products to help keep their ag sector afloat, help keep Ukraine's products on markets. Russia backed out of that deal, terminated the initiative in July 2023, which then forced Ukraine to push more exports out through its Ukrainian neighbors and to seek other ways to export by sea. So that has affected Ukraine's production and exports. And also looking at how Russia is stealing Ukrainian grains, which we have also focused on this podcast. It's not enough for Russia to be systematically targeting all aspects of Ukraine's production and export infrastructure or hindering export otherwise. As of last summer, Russia was accused of stealing 6 million metric tons of Ukrainian grain and exporting it as its own. So for all of those reasons, we had historic impacts on global agriculture markets and on global food security. In fact, right now we're able to say that this war has caused the greatest military-related disruption to global agriculture markets in at least a century.
That's amazing.
Amazing. And I think at least a century, if not for far longer, because you haven't had a war between major agricultural producers that's happened at a time when agriculture markets have been globalized to the extent that they are today. So you had major wars affecting agriculture, for example, in World War II. Of course, that happened, but agriculture markets weren't globalized the way that they are today. So you didn't have ramifications all over the world like you did with this war. As I mentioned, I like to focus a lot of our research and analysis on the role of agriculture and food security with regard to Russia's war strategy. A lot has been done on the impacts of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on global food security and global food prices, and this has receded from headlines. It's pretty apparent. I mean, this was front and center in headlines when Russia invaded Ukraine. It was front and center in headlines when Russia backed out of the Black Sea Grain Initiative.
But we don't hear so much about it anymore.
We don't. And one thing that I like to highlight is that this remains incredibly important. So on the one hand, global food prices, they hit an all-time high when Russia invaded Ukraine, all-time nominal high. They've receded since then. They've been falling every month since then. So that's really not in the headlines. But it's important because food prices remain incredibly high, especially in the poorest countries. We're seeing levels of food price inflation on average around 30%, so really high levels of food price inflation in a lot of the poorest countries. We saw in 2022, one of the highest levels of acute food insecurity, 258 million people experiencing acute food insecurity. We'll see what the numbers look like for 2023 pretty soon. The impacts aren't limited to these few years. The UN is predicting that even as far as 2030, millions more people will be food insecure because of Russia's invasion. This matters in and of itself, but it also matters because the more food insecure populations and countries are, the more Russia will be able to potentially manipulate these countries with its own food exports.
So, Kaylin, since the beginning of this war, and it is a real war, everybody knows this now. Elliot Cohen came on the podcast last week and talked about how real this war actually is. You had a hunch early on that this was going to be part of Russia's strategy.
Yeah.
Since then, now we're 2 years in, and you've collected data on it and written a number of important papers that are available on the CSIS website and on our social media. Tell us what the data has shown.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am happy to talk about how Russia is using all of this as part of its military and political strategy in this war. First of all, Russia is doing this primarily to undercut Ukraine's economy because agriculture is a main source of revenue for the country. It was 10% of Ukraine's GDP, 41% of Ukraine's export revenue before the war happened.
41% of their export 41%, revenue.
1%. Exactly.
That's 41%. Huge.
Mm-hmm. A year into the war, the World Bank and others estimated $40 billion in losses and damages to the ag sector. They just updated that to $80 billion in losses and damages.
So it's doubled.
Huge. Doubled in a year, huge amounts of revenue lost because of this war already. Ukraine's GDP as a whole has contracted, and agriculture's contribution to Ukraine's GDP is even smaller than it was. So agriculture is contributing even less to a smaller GDP. That has to be one of the main purposes of Russia's, as I said, systematic attacks. Second of all, you're seeing disruptions across the region because as Ukraine had less access to its Black Sea ports, and that's fluctuated through the term of the war, and as Elliot Cohen brought up in your podcast the other day, they've since most recently, Ukraine's been able to transport more out of the Black Sea because of Ukraine's naval successes. But again, this has been irregular over the past 2 years. Ukraine was forced to push its agriculture exports out through its European neighbors, through what were called solidarity lanes, and these were intended to just facilitate export of Ukrainian grain. What we're seeing, though, is, as one agriculture minister called it, these countries became warehouses instead of transport corridors. So these countries that Ukraine was pushing its exports through experienced a glut in grains from Ukraine, which meant there's, you know, far more grains in these countries. So domestic prices fell, which meant that their own farmers were getting less profit. Their farmers were protesting, and this was influencing everything. It was influencing national elections in a number of countries. You had a number of unilateral trade measures put in place by countries to protect their ag sectors from Ukrainian grain. The EU has stepped in. All of this to say, and this is a very complicated and evolving by the minute situation.
And messy.
Very
messy.
I'm
assuming that's what Russia wants.
Exactly what Russia wants. I mean, as we're seeing right now at the Polish border, a blockade by Poland of Ukrainian grains. And this is, as you said, it's exactly what Russia wants. Russia wants to sow disunity in the EU with regard to support for Ukraine. Russia wants to divert resources that could be used for supporting Ukraine in the context of this war. All of this is in Russia's benefit. And not only that, we're seeing accusations from Poland and from Ukraine that Russia is actually infiltrating these protests with their own actors to amplify anti-Ukrainian sentiment.
Wow. So this is a really sophisticated operation.
Sophisticated. And then to get to the question that you just asked about what data we're seeing about how this is affecting the rest of the world, we've been assuming since Russia invaded Ukraine that because Ukraine would be producing and exporting less, that Russia would be able to make up for that shortfall with its own exports, because Russia, as we all know, is a major producer and exporter, especially of wheat. Past two harvests have been records for Russia and likely world records for amounts of wheat exported by any country. So Russia has formidable exports of wheat, fertilizer, other ag products. So we were assuming that as Ukraine is producing and exporting less, Russia would make up for that. And finally, 2 years in, we're able to put some numbers behind that. What we're seeing is, as we assumed, Ukraine's exports to every single region have fallen, with the exception of the EU, of course. Drastic increases. Before the war, Ukraine exported 2% of its wheat to the EU. Now it's 50%. Huge jumps, obviously, which helps explain a lot of the disunity that we're seeing, all the trade-related protests, et cetera. Also, an interesting side story is that Ukraine had been exporting, even through the war, a significant amount of corn to China. China was relying on Ukraine for this really important source of animal feed. It helped keep those countries close during the war to counterbalance Russia's relationship with China. Ukraine no longer has that market with China. China has looked to other sources for maize.
It's because China cut them off strategically, or because China couldn't wait for the shipments?
More the latter, because of production and export difficulties from Ukraine. And in fact, China has turned to Brazil for a source of maize instead of Ukraine. But that was an interesting story. And in fact, the last time we talked around the termination of the Black Sea Grain Initiative, there were assumptions by some that China's reliance on Ukraine for corn especially would keep Russia in this deal, would prevent Russia from terminating it. Of course, it didn't. But regardless, I think that's an interesting side story, is China's relationship there. But looking at Russia, we've been able to see how Russia has maintained its export markets in a number of places. Its top export markets are the Middle East and North Africa. 59% of wheat in the Middle East is imported from Russia, 47% North Africa. So enormous market shares in those regions. And then from last year to this year, Russia's exports of grains to every region of sub-Saharan Africa, East, Central, West, and Southern Africa, all increased. Why is that? Because these countries are reliant on imports to meet their food security by and large. They may have disagreed with Russia's decision to terminate the Black Sea Grain Initiative, and Russia is trying to curry favor with these countries by exporting more to those countries. And so what we're finding is that Russia is manipulating with food the same countries that are made food insecure because of this war. And it's not only exports to these countries, but Russia has offered free grain, as you might have seen in the press. As soon as Russia terminated the Black Sea Grain Initiative last summer, Russia pledged shipments of free grain, which was a highly cynical move, but to 6 countries in Africa. It got a lot of press out of that pledge. There was a question as to whether Russia would deliver on that or not. Fast forward to February 21st, 2024, Russian media reported that all those shipments to 6 countries had been completed. So between 25 and 50,000 metric tons to 6 countries in Africa had been completed. And I think that that was timed exactly to counteract negative press that would be happening around the 2-year mark.
So is Russia winning any friends doing this, or is it just, you know, by necessity, these countries are acquiescing?
You know, I don't know if it's friends that Russia is winning so much as quelling potential opposition from these countries. The countries that Russia offered free grain to were ones that had either voted against UN measures opposing Russia over the past 2 years, or abstained from voting.
So which countries are that we're talking about?
Yep, it's Burkina Faso, Central African Republic, Eritrea, Mali, Somalia, and Zimbabwe. And what I think is happening is that Russia acknowledges that food has a very different practical and symbolic importance compared to other imports. So a country can be import dependent for energy, for arms, for a lot of things, and food. But leaders know that if sources of food are disrupted, then that can have immediate impacts on that leader's hold on power. So social discontent can increase, political unrest can happen, and a leader's hold on power is threatened. And I think that Moscow very well understands that dynamic and is using food to strengthen its relationship with countries in the global south, particularly in Africa.
Let's go back to Europe, though, for a second. In what ways does Russia benefit from the disunity amongst EU nations on this issue?
I think it benefits politically. One important way is economic benefits. Beyond the symbolism of threatened unified EU support for Ukraine, Russia benefits because, for example, one decision that the EU has made is to support farmers in these countries that are being harmed by this influx of Russian grains. So the EU, of course, wants to do both things. It wants to protect its own country's agriculture sectors, protect farmers, and also maintain unified support for Ukraine. Any money that's used to support farmers, for example, is money that could otherwise be used for other ways of supporting Ukraine. So anything that diverts financial support for Ukraine, anything that threatens unified EU support for Ukraine, anything like that is in Russia's interest.
And it withers away at the support for Ukraine because as these countries have to deal with such complex issues, they turn inward.
They absolutely do. And this was a factor in a number of national elections that have happened at least over the past year. But farmers are protesting. They are encouraging their candidates and their leaders to, again, to look inward, to support their own populations first before supporting Ukraine.
So obviously, Caitlin, this has been brutal on the Ukrainian people. How are they coping at this point?
What we're seeing among the Ukrainians, and I'll talk about the agriculture sector, it's important to highlight that the story can be told in two different ways. And what I've highlighted so far are all of the ways that Ukraine's production and exports have fallen and all the reasons that this has fallen, predictably so, over the past 2 years. Nonetheless, Ukraine has remained a top global exporter of a number of agricultural commodities, of maize and barley and sunflower products and wheat and other products. I think that while, as I said, predictably, production exports were falling with implications for Russia's war strategy, with implications for global food security, it's very important to note that it's remarkable that Ukraine has been able to remain a top global exporter. And I think that that's due so much to the determination of Ukrainian agricultural producers, commitment of the government, continued activity of the private sector, other things.
So, Caitlin, I want to close on this. What has the United States done to address this, and what more can we and others do?
So, first and foremost, the most important thing is robust support for Ukraine's military defense, which, as we know, for all the reasons we've been discussing, is in question right now. Everything that we've provided militarily to Ukraine has also helped Ukraine indirectly to maintain its ag production and exports. Beyond that, Ukraine has benefited from some direct support for its ag sector. For example, USAID launched an initiative in 2022, Agriculture Resilience and Growth Initiative for Ukraine. The State Department is the top bilateral supporter of demining efforts in Ukraine, which of course benefits its agriculture sector. We've directed some of our assistance to Ukraine's agriculture sector. It's a tiny drop in the bucket, though. $350 million for Agri-Ukraine from the U.S. government, about $90 million from the State Department for demining. At least $90 million. I think what the U.S. government could do is, in hopes that robust military support for Ukraine is continued, I think the U.S. government could take another look at the importance of investing in Ukraine's agriculture sector, because as we're seeing Russia being able to use its own ag exports for influence in the global south, Ukraine producing and exporting more would be a counterbalance. It would be an alternative for these countries to Russia's grain and Russia's influence. So that's one thing. And then the second thing is, I think that it's worth looking in U.S. government development programming at where it is that Russia is having more influence because of its ag exports, and at least having that be a data point in where it is that we decide to target our assistance, is looking at where Russia's influence is strong and growing.
Caitlin, this is all a lot to think about and really important when we think about this conflict and its broader implications. So thanks so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.
If you enjoyed this podcast, check out our larger suite of CSIS podcasts from Into Africa, The Asia Chessboard, China Power, AIDS 2020, The Trade Guys, Smart Women, Smart Power, and more. You can listen to them all on major streaming platforms like iTunes and Spotify. Visit csis.org/podcasts to see our full catalog.